it on this Friday. It's Cairo Nights. Once again, live from the Carter Subaru Studios. My name is Aaron Mason, filling in for G. Scott, the third and final time this week. It's been a blast. Frank Shires.
Yes, sir.
Thank you for doing the news, setting us up proper.
I betcha.
Going to talk about that Alaska Ferry later in the show.
Are we? Good.
Yeah. Good. Yeah. We got my man behind the glass, David Burbank, has a little experience.
Right,
the Alaska Ferry.
Not me personally, but I have much experience with Bellingham and through my family with that ferry.
Both of us, actually, not the ferry, but I both of us because I lived in Bellingham too.
Well, there you go.
Yeah,
maybe we'll have to involve Frank in the discussion. But first, we're going to lead off tonight with a little Dianne Feinstein. How about it, guys? Twitter is a Twitter. At the senator from California, because there's this video going around that doesn't exactly shine a great light on Ms. Feinstein. You see, there were a bunch of students, Californian students. They were from the Sunrise Movement. It's this environmental activist group. A group of kids went to her offices in Washington, D.C., and they wanted to ask her to please consider the Green New Deal. The Green New Deal, if you haven't heard, and if you haven't, tell me that rock you're living under because it sounds comfortable. The Green New Deal is basically, it's been proposed by Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Bernie Sanders is involved. It's a very progressive, pretty left, pretty Democrat idea that we are going to take money, billions of dollars, and use that to invest into clean energy in attempt to sort of offset the climate change, the effects of climate change. So because it's so expensive and the time frame is quite extensive, it's been mocked by a lot of people on the right. And there's a lot of the more centrist Democrats. They say it's too far-fetched. They say we can't actually get that done. And, of course, the Democratic California Senator Dianne Feinstein is one of them. She says it's unrealistic, this deal. So these young people, they go to meet her today. They're hanging out in her office. And a Democratic strategist, his name's Waleed Saeed, he posted the video of this encounter on his Twitter page. Before even entering the building, let me just set it up. The kids talked about what they hope to accomplish that day.
We're going to go in and share this letter, and we're going to do it all together.
Yeah.
Share it in front of Feinstein.
We're asking her to vote yes on the Green New Deal.
So this is kids engaging in democracy. I like this. They had a big letter. It was almost like a scroll of butcher paper, and they all wrote things on it. There's even a little drawing of a dog. It was cute. And so they're going to go into their senator's office and address her about the urgency of the New Deal, and here's what they had to say.
Some scientists have said that we have 12 years to turn this around.
Well, it's not going to get turned around in 10 years.
It's not going to get turned around in 10 years, the senator says. She's being a bit of a negative Nelly, if you ask me. So one of the older members of the Sunrise Movement reminded the senator that these children would be the ones to face the consequences of climate change. It's not her. It's not people in their 60s, 70s, 80s. It's the kids of today. And here's what the senator had to say.
Senator, if this doesn't get turned around in 10 years, you're looking at the faces of the people who are going to be living with these consequences.
The government is supposed to be for the people and by the people and all
for the people. You know what's interesting about this group is I've been doing this for 30 years. I know what I'm doing.
I've been doing this for 30 years. I know what I'm doing. I don't like this. I don't like this one bit. She began talking down to these kids. These kids! These children! And she decided she wanted to, you know, throw her weight around and talk about how awesome of a politician she is.
You come in here and you say it has to be my way or the highway. I don't respond to that. I've gotten elected. I just ran. I was elected by almost a million vote plurality. And I know what I'm doing. So, you know, maybe people should listen a little bit.
This is the most frustrating thing I think you can hear from a government official.
Oh, my gosh. It's just because do you really think that just because you've spent a long amount of time in public office that that means you shouldn't be moving along with the progress of
right?
our country?
You shouldn't. Ms. Feinstein, Senator Feinstein, you are the one who should be doing the listening.
Mm-hmm.
You are the one who should be doing the listening.
Well,
and you should be listening to everyone.
You are
from
a
California
public servant.
Correct. David Burbank. Ding, 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 ding. Point sound. That is 100% correct. And listen, so we are not the only ones with this opinion. There was a 16-year-old who was also there, too. She was a member of the movement, and she said basically exactly this.
I hear what you're saying, but we're the people who voted you. You're supposed to listen to us. That's your job.
How old are
your
you?
Job.
How old
I'm
are
16.
You
I can't
well, you didn't vote.
Vote
for me.
Well, she...
You didn't vote for me! Where is my awful politician bingo card? Because I bingo. I might have bingo at this point. And we're 12 minutes into the show. I think I got bingo. Ugh. So, okay. She brings up a good point. And not because she meant to. But she brings up a good point. 16-year-olds, they cannot vote. So, what do you do when... What do you do about the fact that 16-year-olds don't necessarily have control, autonomy over their future? They aren't able to vote, and they, you know, they have some strong opinions about things. Well, there's a bill being pushed in Oregon right now for 2020 to give 16-year-olds the right to vote. Now, I'm sure you're saying, no. Like I said, the other night, my belief in age limits on things is basically my age should be the limit, and no one younger than me should be able to do anything. Buy alcohol, cigarettes, drive, none of that. But in the state of Oregon, 16-year-olds can drive. And that's taking your life into your hands. That's taking the lives of people around you as you are traveling on the roads into your hands. That isn't something to be considered lightly. And I know a ton of responsible 16-year-olds who are civic-minded, who have been through some stuff, who've seen some things. I know, they're just 16. But that doesn't mean... That doesn't mean they're right. What do you think about this, David? 16 and voting in Oregon?
It's difficult, but I think with the current circumstances and especially the sort of how rapidly this climate change is taking place and how much it has been taking place within the past 10 years and how much exponentially worse we're making it on almost a day-by-day basis, mm-hmm. I think it's imperative that we give the youth the ability to... make changes. Maybe 16 is too young, but I don't know. The 16-year-old who was talking to Feinstein, she sounded very, you know, eloquent, and she obviously yeah. knew what she was talking about. It's not right. like 16-year-olds can't know the issues. And I think, for one thing, schools should start teaching more maybe about policies and about bills and about things that you want to be voting on. And in that way, inform 16-year-olds, and then those 16-year-olds are more than equipped to vote, I think.
Now, I don't know all the details about this particular bill in Oregon, but we will be tracking it. We'll be following it. I know that I can hear you out there. I know 16-year-olds. It's provisional licensing, I believe. Right? Is it a full-on license at 16 in Oregon?
I believe so.
Full
yeah.
autonomy
I think,
to drive around.
Yeah, right. I think 15 is the learner's permit.
I see. I grew up in New Jersey. 17. How do you feel about that?
I mean, that's why you're so wise beyond your years.
That's right.
It's because you had that extra year.
That to incubate, to really get my mind right. You're 100% right, David. Okay, let's move along. That's enough of that. Senator, shame. She responded on Twitter like 45 minutes ago. It was the typical stuff. I listened to everyone, and I'm glad the kids were here, and it was good to talk with them. And
just every response that she had really just it it shouted to, she had no real response. And so she went to a defensive personal place of like, how dare you say that I'm not, I don't know what I'm talking about or whatever. And it's, that's not the point of what they were trying to do. The point was to implore her to take on these changes and to be a voice for the future and for the youth.
There's a full video of the 10-minute interaction. We didn't pull all of that audio. And one of the things we didn't pull was Feinstein saying that there's no way to pay for it. That resolution will not pass in the Senate, and you can take that back to whoever sent you here. Like, come on.
That's so patronizing.
And you know, it's so patronizing. It's just squashing these kids. And that's the worst attitude. Oh, well, it's not going to pass. Can't do it. Try!
It's literally your job.
It's your job! When your constituents tell you they want you to do something, you do it! I'm on fire tonight. Let's shuffle these dates. Frustrated. Situation. You know who else is having a situation? Pepsi. Are you a Pepsi guy, David, or a Coke guy?
What do you think, Aaron?
I assume a Coke guy because you're not a dummy.
Yeah, I'm the red and white, not the blue and white. Come on.
What am I holding in my hand?
Yeah, I'm a red-blooded American just like you. We got that Coca-Cola.
I got a 20-ounce bottle of Coca-Cola right here. But Pepsi's... So, just gonna lay this out there, right? First of all, two out of every three people in the world are Coke people. So, good on you. PepsiCo, the parent company, and they own a whole lot of businesses, is beginning a four-year plan to restructure the way that the whole company operates. And included in the plan will be the firing of about 1,000 corporate employees and the closure of certain Pepsi plants. The CEO of PepsiCo, Ramon LaGuarta, claims that they are planning to add far more automation to their process. Relentlessly automate was a quote that was used in the article. Automated machines will be replacing the need for human labor. In theory, lowering costs of Pepsi doing business. However, the process will be costing the corporation up to $2.5 billion because they're going to have to pay out severance to pay for those that they lay off, the cost of closing factories, other employee-related costs is the term that they used. So even with shelling out $2.5 billion to roboticize their operation, it's still going to be worth money. It's still going to make money for Pepsi. And the CEO is confident that by 2023, Pepsi will save up to $1 billion a year because of the cutbacks, because they don't have to pay human workers. I don't want to get Black Mirror on everybody, but this is something that that people have been talking about for a long time. This is an issue that I don't feel is really being given its proper shrift. Is that the term? The idea that automation is going to replace human workers, we've seen it in small bits. We've seen certain industries get turned over on their heads because of automation. And the people who work in those industries have been able to sort of find work somewhere else or move on to another career. But soon, a day is approaching that even those jobs will be replaced by computers and automation. And I don't know exactly, A, that we're prepared for that, or B, what the heck we're going to do.
Yeah, I don't understand where, besides the sort of besides the sort of technical side of the machinery and stuff, which there are obviously technical engineers who do all of that, and they have jobs, which is great for them.
For now.
For now.
Until robots fix robots.
Right, exactly. Like, where does it, this is such a bad argument, but where does it end, Aaron?
Where does it stop?
But
it's a slippery slope.
It is, but like, I don't know. It's because you see it with the self-checkouts. You see it with the auto industry and all the robots they're using and the machines they're using to build cars. It's where are humans going? Like, what skills do we need to get in our schooling in order to set us up for jobs, besides jobs in like entertainment and jobs in media and stuff, which
right.
there are not a ton of those jobs. And they're also not to, you know, put down our professions, but like they're not really a necessary job when you really think about it. They were sort of on the periphery of good jobs.
Right. I would call us the periphery of essential services. We are here yes. to provide information in an emergency. You're going to have the radio station. If it all goes down, when the zombies start running over the hills, Cairo Radio will be here and will be broadcasting.
Yes. Well, and luckily, radio is the opposite of a dying industry, right? That's what they've been saying for years, right? That's radio is yeah, not a dying industry.
That's what I've heard. I'm a podcast guy. I don't know what to tell you. I don't know what to tell you about that. But yeah, I think it's something that we really need to start considering. And like you said, David, training in schools. I graduated high school in 1999. I remember being in high school when we got the internet. And I remember having friends who were engineer types, you know, and they really knew how to work these computers and what websites were and how to like code things. I didn't know what code was. And there were no classes for that. This is just stuff that these guys did in their spare time. And now, of course, there's more computer engineering available. I know that they encourage people to get degrees in computer engineering, software engineering, hardware engineering, whatever it is, because those jobs are going to be in demand. That's the future. It's part of the STEM stuff, science and math and technology and whatever E stands for.
Electronically.
There you go. Why not? Environment.
No, I don't think that's a part of it.
Elephants?
Oh, yes. I think that
is. See? I knew it. I knew it was elephants. David, we don't have time for the Alaska story, for the ferry story. But I do want to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to push that to later in the show because it's big news. It's big news, especially if you live up in Bellingham. I know we got some folks up there
mm-hmm.
who are listening right now. And I'm a big fan of, like, cool ways to get places.
Heck yeah, especially right? boats. Like, anytime you get to sail across the ocean and, like, just see whales and feel the wind, the sea breeze on your
yes.
through your hair, that's just the best. Like, going on the Victoria Clipper is one of my favorite things in the world. It's great.
I've been in Seattle for almost 20 years. And I still get all excited when I go on a ferry. Still, just to cross the water.
Oh, yeah. I've been on a trillion ferries, and I love it. I love it every time.
All right, folks. We're going to be back real soon. We got a whole lot more show for you. Don't you worry about it. We're going to take care of your evening. Let's hang out together. Have a good time. My name's Aaron Mason, filling in for G. Scott, right here on Cairo Nights, Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. This funk.
This is actually a new one. Debuting
yeah.
right now tonight.
All
live
right.
on Cairo Nights.
Who is this?
It's ASAP Rocky uh-huh. and Muramasa, I want to say.
I
think
unfamiliar.
That's the producer. But yeah, it's just a cool funky beat.
David Burbank, a.k.a. DB. The B stands for bumps.
Mm-hmm. Well,
Dank Bumps.
Mm-hmm. And my middle name starts with a J, so I'm DJ Bump.
Oh,
DJ Bumps.
If only we had devices that could like make sound effects, but I don't have anything.
Is there such thing as evening zoo radio? So I think we just did it. Oh, boy. Amazon. Let's talk about Amazon a little bit. I want to talk about Amazon, and I want to talk about the toilet. Because there is, now we all know that you've heard stories about the Amazon, in particular, I think it's the Amazon warehouses, where efficiency is just so high on the list of priorities that you are, every minute you spend is being tracked, and that includes bathroom breaks. They don't want you taking extended bathroom breaks, by which they mean more than like 5 or 10 minutes, However, in these giant warehouses, sometimes it can take that long just to get to and from the bathroom, and then you are demoted, you are penalized, there's all sorts of negative consequences that one may suffer if they attempt to go to the bathroom. So Amazon is being sued by a fellow named Nicholas Stover. He's a former employee from the call center in Lexington, Kentucky, and he's suing for a violation of the Americans with Disabilities Act because he has Crohn's disease. If you have Crohn's disease, like many Americans do, you have to go to the restroom frequently throughout the day. It's what you have to do. And according to Cairo 7, Nicholas Stover would frequently use the bathroom at the customer service center where he worked, and his supervisor saw this as a waste of company time, and so he was actually fired for going to the bathroom. This is, I agree with Nicholas's lawyer or his representative in the lawsuit, because Amazon allows a very limited and what he calls draconian time limit for restroom breaks, which is completely, to me, crazy. This is a basic human necessity. There's nothing you can do about this. It's not your choice to go to the bathroom. When nature calls, you pick up the phone. There's not a lot of debate there. Now, I've fortunately never been at a job where this has been a big issue. I've been fortunate enough that if ever I need to use the facilities, I am at any point in time free to get up and do so. But David, you were telling me that you had a complicated bathroom situation at work.
Yeah, well, so one of my other jobs is Starbucks I work at, and the one I work at in particular is a drive-thru, and so there's no restrooms for customers, but there is one very, very small restroom for all of the employees at any given time. There's, you know, 10 employees on the quote unquote floor, which is basically just the little box booth that we're in. So it gets very crowded.
Sure.
And the restroom is, it's at the back of the sort of box area, but there's zero privacy at all. Like you know immediately who is going in the restroom, how long they are taking, because there's one restroom. It's in this sort of walkway to get to where everyone needs to be going. And in addition, if you have to use the restroom while you're on the clock, you have to have someone else fill in for you for that time.
That's what I was just going to ask.
And we all have like little headsets on that we're talking to each other on. And so it's a constant communication between everyone. Like,
can you turn it off when you're in the bathroom?
Yeah, well, okay. You're supposed to take it.
I don't want
to
naked
for sanitary reasons.
I don't want a naked gun situation.
Yeah, or Robert Durst,
that's
one of those.
Right. The Jinx.
Yeah, the Jinx. Yeah, that's right. But it's so you constantly know who is in the restroom and how long they're taking, because depending on how long they're taking, you're having to cover whatever their position in the store, and so it is a very stressful thing to go back there, especially if you are having some maybe stomach discomfort, or especially obviously if you have something like Crohn's disease or irritable bowel syndrome or something like that. It's like you will have to go frequently, and people will definitely know that you're not just going number one.
Yeah,
and it's really embarrassing. And it's, I don't know, it does, the good thing is it does sort of make us all a little bit closer as fellow coworkers, because there's no hiding anything. We all know everything about each other. And it's also a very enclosed space, so we're constantly having to like touch each other to get around each other.
Yeah.
It's just a very much a family feeling, but it's also, it's a little weird, honestly.
Well, two things. One is, don't feel awkward, man. Everybody does it.
That is true. Literally everyone does it.
Yes, everyone. Every single person. And I used to get really freaked out. We had a little bathroom discussion last night with me, you, and Frank. And, I stopped letting it bother me. So if people know my business, so be it. It's my natural business. But if you're Starbucks, if you're Amazon, if you're a company for whom efficiency is important, which I assume every company has to consider that, you can't, people are just not a number in an equation. You have to, there's a human element that has to be considered. I've heard this from UPS truck drivers, that there's no time to stop. Several delivery company truck drivers, that there's no time to stop to use the bathroom. And you have to factor in this basic human function into that equation. You're dealing with people. There have to be some circumstances where people are allowed to be people.
Well, and especially in this case, I really hope that this lawsuit it goes through, and this guy Nick is able to, you know, get some sort of some money from this or some settlement or something, because he has, not only is he a human who has to go to the bathroom like all of us, but right. He has a specific disease that forces him
right.
to have to use the restroom specifically, not to get grotesque, but specifically number two, he has to do that many times a day.
Yes.
And it's, I mean, I know people with Crohn's disease, and it's not only is it like an embarrassing thing for them, but it's exhausting. Like, it actually like exhausts your body as well.
Yeah.
And it's like, for him to then get fired because he's quote unquote a time thief for the company
yeah.
is just ludicrous.
No, it's a medical, this is why it's being filed under as a violation of the Americans with Disabilities Act, because he cannot help this. This is a health condition. And yeah, like you said, he's not back behind the shed smoking a cig while he's supposed to be working. He's
taking care of business.
Well said. I couldn't have said it better. I'm going to leave it at that. Guys, we're going to take care of some business all night tonight until 10 p.m. We're going to party all night until 10 p.m. right here on Cairo Radio. Listen, unpopular opinion, it's next. I got a good one for you. Cairo Radio, 97.3 FM. Live and high energy on a Friday. It's about 7:48 p.m. I'm giving the time like a proper radioman, if that's the term. It's time for a segment that you all know and love. So here's the little theme song.
Popular. You're really unpopular.
Frank's singing. We got Frank Shires in for this, of course. Wouldn't be an unpopular opinion without him. And today, the unpopular opinion seems to be mine. And it is this. Naps are the worst. I hate taking naps. I avoid them at all costs.
Why?
I can't tell you the last time I had one. Frank, because it screws up my whole clock. When I see people who are like, I take a quick like 20-minute cat nap, and then I'm fresh and ready to go, I am like a locomotive engine. When I wake up, it takes me 3 hours to wake up. It's a very slow roll. So even if it's just a 20-minute sleep, I'm out. It's reset, and I have to start from scratch. And I just feel groggy and out of it. And God help us all if I wake up and it's dark out. That nothing screws with my head more. What do you think? Are you a nap guy?
Me?
Yeah.
Well, if... Sometimes, depends on how much sleep I've gotten the night before. And of course, with my weird schedule, I go to bed at like 4 a.m. But I've done morning shows a lot in my career, and naps were critical there because, you know, you're getting up at 3 a.m. or 4, you do the morning show, you're done, usually out the door like Colleen O'Brien, right?
Yeah.
About noon.
Yep.
And then if you want to have a life of any sort, then you're forced to do like a 90-minute nap a couple of hours after you get home, if you can. And that way you can actually go to bed at maybe 8 o'clock and have close to a normal night's sleep.
So I'm willing to make an allowance for a regular sleep schedule.
Okay.
If you've got a job like Colleen and every day you're kind of doing an hour and a half or something.
You actually have to sound like a human being where you're rested and ready to rock and roll.
Yes.
Yeah.
Then I'm willing to make allowances for that.
What about David?
Oh man, I have a very complicated relationship with naps.
Tell us all about
because,
it.
Because so I, as I mentioned before, I work at a Starbucks as well, and I do that 5 days a week. And my mornings usually start. I get in there at about 4 or 4:30.
Oh, what time do you get up?
Well, if I'm jogging to the Starbucks, which is kind of my want because then I get my jog in, then I'll wake up at like 2:30 so that I can leave.
Oh,
just, Frank, God, just as you're leaving the radio station,
oh,
I'm getting up.
God.
But for me, it is essential to take a nap at some points. Like, if I'm working a really rigorous day, like a couple days this week, I was working 16 hours
right
out of the day. And for that, I will take one of the short naps. So I'll take like a 25-minute nap during my scheduled lunch at Starbucks. And well, here's the thing. There's actually some science behind this is if you take a nap that is about 30 minutes, and if you drink a little bit of coffee right before it, mm-hmm. you'll wake up and you actually won't feel very groggy.
Really?
Like Yeah. And I will wake up and I'll feel...
I won't go to sleep.
No, well, that's the thing is like, first off, you need to be really tired, which oftentimes I am. And so I drink a little coffee, go to sleep for about 20 minutes, come back up, and I'm rocking and ready to go. And for me, it's like, it either has to be that 20 minute or it has to be like 3 hours long.
There so
there's no in between for
when
me.
When you're done here... You mm-hmm. go home and go to bed. Like you're in bed
basically.
By 10:30 or 11, right?
Ideally, but yeah. when I mean after a show as exciting as Cairo Nights, it's hard to not be a little bit charged up when I get home. So I do tend to not really get into bed until 11:30 or so. So naps are essential for me, definitely.
See, now I will tell you, despite my doughy hipster physique, I've had some like pretty hardcore job. I was a landscaper in Tampa for a year. I was up at 6 in the morning.
Ugh.
And like, yeah, it was awful. It was miserable. Yeah. And even then, I can't nap. I'll caffeinate. That's what I do. I'm a power through and then just like hit the wall and then fight a little more through the wall and then just drop.
Wow.
Drop.
Couldn't live that way. God drop bless
that.
You.
And God bless you, Frank Shires, for joining us in this unpopular opinion. Guys, the next hour is going to be I'm really excited about it. We have Tom Tagney coming in. He's going to talk all about the Oscars, and then I'm going to give a little tribute to one of my favorite comedians that we lost today. Coming up, Cairo Nights, Cairo Radio, 97.3 FM.